All right. Let's quiet down. I know kids are going off to nursery. So some of you are new to family camp this year, and if you're new, you might not know that occasionally we will often have a missions speaker at our camps in addition to our main speaker. And this year, we're very pleased to have Reverend Bogumił Jarmilak from Poland. Boo-Boo, as you might know him, has been here. Yes! We're excited. It's been 7 years since you've been here, I think we decided. But what is this, probably the fourth time that you've been, give or take, at family camp? More than that, five or six. Boo-Boo is a pastor in Poznań, Poland. He's part of Jeep. Some of you who are new have heard a lot about Jeep, but Jeep is an organization of Series C churches that support church ministers and planters in Eastern Europe, in Poland, Ukraine, Hungary, Bulgaria, and Belarus. Did I miss one? And Czech Republic, thank you. And so Boo has been very instrumental since the beginning of that project for many years. RCC was one of the founding churches that has been involved in Jeep since the very earliest days. And Boo-Boo has done many, many things, which I won't recount here, but you will have to ask him. Also, I hear John Unger has many stories about his driving skills in Eastern Europe. So if you want to hear more about that, you'll have to ask him. I will just say that the first and only time that I was in Poland, we took a group of RCC kids in 05, no, this would have been 08, I believe it was. And Boo-Boo was trucking Canadian and American kids all over Poland and Germany, trying to translate from German into English, neither of which were his native languages. And it just does so much for us as we've gone over there, does so much for the Eastern European churches that we work with and that are part of the CREC. He is the presiding minister of the recently formed Hus Presbytery, which is the Eastern European churches and the Japanese church in the CREC. So we're just really excited to have him, and I'll introduce him now. Welcome, Boo Boo.
Eight? Okay. They told me 45 minutes. Well, first of all, thank you for having me here again. I was getting like really worried a little bit, like 5 years, 6 years, and then I hear I was like the third best choice or something like that. But I'm get used to it. Well, no, but honestly speaking, thank you very much, especially RCC. Because without RCC, well, there would be no Jeep probably, but there probably would be no CREC presence in Europe at all. And now who's presbytery? And no troubles and problems. But thank you again. So today I'm going to... I was hoping that you would be more like old school people, especially looking at Matt's baseball cap, but... so like and his mustache, and that you would have like a proper screen and proper projector. John actually bought me like a laser pointer, especially for that, but the laser pointer doesn't work on this screen. So if you don't get much from my talk, not my fault really. So I'm going to speak tonight and tomorrow, and tonight I will give you more like a history lesson, and tomorrow I will talk more about what's actually happening to our brothers and sisters in Ukraine in the context of what? Of what?
War.
What war? Well, exactly. Exactly, because, you know, some people say, you know, the events in Ukraine. or the war in Ukraine, but it's actually the Russian aggression. And, you know, I know. Thank God I'm an old man. I really don't care what people think about me. I will not try to be woke at all, and I will probably offend many of you, both Dostoevsky lovers and also, like, Joe Biden haters. But, well, life is more complicated than this, I can tell you. So today, why the historical... Come on. Why the historical introduction? Because, you know, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, you know him, right? He is famous or infamous for many things, but he was the one who liked to talk a lot about loving your neighbor, right? The only problem, and then he gave his kids to, like, a state-run orphanage, right? That's about, like, loving your neighbors. But he was actually very consistent, because he always said, oh, you know, I love, you know, the neighbors, like, really this needy, poor bastards, I would like to say, but that's probably not the proper word. Like, you know, out there on the other side of the globe, you know, in a country that I can't even find on a map, right? These are the neighbors that I want to love. And these are the neighbors that I want to help. And, well, it's easy, right, to love this kind of neighbors. It's not that we don't have to love them, but basically it's much easier to love the people on the other side of the globe, right? Or the ones who live on the moon or on the Mars, like the farther the better, right? It's the hardest to actually love the people whom we know, but I probably shouldn't go into this. I really don't like Jean-Jacques Rousseau. But then I know that, you know, the Ukrainian people actually have one here. Come on, where is she? Oops.
Oops.
I shouldn't have asked. Well, but she's here, like, generally speaking, right? And she will probably come back for breakfast. So you know some of the Ukrainian people. Some of you actually have been to Ukraine. Raise up your hand. Who has been to Ukraine? One, two, three. That's it? Four? Oh, no, that wasn't. And then, but some of our Ukrainian brothers and even sisters came over here and even visited you and enjoyed the RCC family camp. That was Sansanich and his wife, Ala. That was, who else? Sasha Pavluk with his wife, Ira, and two daughters, right? Wait. I want to hear the names of the daughters. Christina and Soomiya. And then Sergei, the short guy. Come on. He is. Well, there is nothing wrong with being short. I know. My wife is short. And that's good. So, you know them, some of them, some of you have actually been there, been to their homes and houses, which is very good, but would like you to get to know them even more, even better. This is why I'm going to give you, like, a short historical sketch, because, you know, so that you can know them better, so that you actually can know their cause better. Because, remind me, World War II, who were the bad guys? Germans, right? Or the Nazis? The Axis. Well, don't forget Italians, right? I am 1/8 Italian, so please don't. Mussolini was the funniest of them, right? He was. But anyway, what was I talking? Oh, the bad guys. Today it's like, you know, all the Nazis, right? The Nazis did. I mean, they had no ethnicity, probably, right? This is the narrative now. The Nazis did this, did that. The commies did this or did that. And, you know, but like 20 years ago, we actually knew who these people were. And I know that there was, like, in the Nazi Germany, there was this guy, his name was Dietrich Bonhoeffer, right? And he wasn't one of the bad guys, obviously, right? So that's why some people say, oh, you know, you cannot actually use the word Germans, because not all Germans were bad. Well, but the majority were, right? I mean, somebody elected Hitler, unfortunately, in the... Okay. So... Who are the bad guys and who are the good guys in this war? Is that that hard to say? I know, you know, the Great Reset guys are the bad guys, right? Joe Biden is the bad guy, right? Justin Trudeau, who just got COVID again, is the bad guy, right? How about Zelensky, the Ukrainian president? Is he a bad guy or a good guy? It is, of course. I wouldn't ask you non-tricky questions. Well, you know, I know he's a liberal. I know he is a close friend of Justin Trudeau. I know that, well, he went to this and that meeting. I know that he's Jewish, which probably doesn't matter, although it does, because he's like a Nazi Jew. No, Jewish Nazi, according to some. But, you know, I won't defend Zelensky, right? Because Ukraine is not President Zelensky. Is it? It is not, right? I think that he changed for better, much better. I think that he grew up finally and became a true statesman, almost like a king of the old times, right? Because especially when your Joe called him and told him, Volodya, I can give you a lift. And how did he answer? I don't need a ride. I need what? Weapons, ammo. That's what he said. And in a way, it was a turning point of this war. This is why today we have 110th day of the war. And the war was not over after a 4 or 5 days, right, of the special military operation. But, you know, it's not about Zelensky, it's not about Joe Biden, it's not about the Great Reset, it's not even about Putin, although, in a way, it is about Putin. It's about the people who lived there, right? It's about the people who lived there for a long time, who didn't intend to attack the neighbor. Yeah, I know, the biolabs. Well, we can talk about the biolabs during the Q&A session, okay? Because I don't know. There must be something wrong with the eyes of some Russian leaders, because they can see biolabs everywhere, like, right? I mean, now they are talking about biolabs basically in all the former Soviet republics that became independent states by now and that don't want to support Putin's policy, right? So that's enough to be labeled like an illegal American secret and something biolab. We can talk about it later. So it's about people who lived there for like ever. It's about the people who just wanted to go around their own business. It's about people who dared to actually choose the alliances that they wanted to join. And then, oh, but this is the problem, because some people and some nations may do this, but others should not, right? Because Ukraine and Belarus and the Baltic states and Poland and Czechia and Slovakia and Hungary and Romania and Moldova and Transnistria and Bulgaria and Yugoslavia, well, I don't know even the names of all the states that came after Yugoslavia, and then all the Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, I mean, they had like 17 republics, right? And then the satellites. That's all. None of these nations can actually make a decision what alliance they want to choose. because this is the buffer zone, right? Because this has always been somehow controlled by Moscow, because they deserve it. How about Taiwan? How about Taiwan? I mean, that used to be part of China. They even speak Chinese there. Well, one of the many versions of Chinese, right? So how about Brazil? That used to be a part of another empire, right? This is why I want to start with this map. And I really like my laser pointer that is basically useless now. So I need to apologize to you, but I will talk to this the right wing. So I'm too sure. The dark green, you see it? That's Moscow, right? The dark green, that's like the lands that Moscow used to rule around the year 1300. Right? And then it started growing. Oh, what is this? What is... No. You know that there are like serious and important politicians in Russia that say, well, we never sold Alaska to America. We just leased Alaska to America for 100 years. When was it? Anybody remembers? 1848? 18? 19? No. 18? What? You bought Alaska from America in 1950? When did you buy Alaska from Russia? 1850? 2020. I think it was more than 100 years ago. 1867. Yes. 1867 plus 100 is 1967. You have never renewed the contract. I mean, this is what really serious top Russian politicians claim, right? Alaska is basically ours. I mean, this is not a joke. I'm not joking. I love joking, but not this time. So this is how they grew. Oh, there is Warsaw, a capital of Poland. And there is, oh, look, an island in Greece. It also was Russian. Once. Well, for like, I can't read that, few years. And why not? Oh, Manchuria. Oh, part of Japan. So this is the general mindset. Like, and unfortunately, many people in the West, they say, you know, so this is the buffer zone, right? This is the sphere of influence, which basically means for us, the Polacks, the Ukrainians, the Belarusians, we have a church in Belarus also, that basically, well, Russia has a claim on you. I mean, you are the buffer zone, which, and you know what a buffer zone is, right? Especially during a war, what a buffer zone is. Can we go to the last one? Or maybe one before the last. Can you do this for me? Oh, yes, you can. I knew you can. So, I will probably have to skip like 80% of what I wanted to tell you, but no. That's the last one. One before the last. Very similar one, just in color. Oh, yes. So, this is the buffer zone. Right? This is the buffer zone. Well, it's called, yeah, this is the buffer zone. And somehow it happens that the buffer zone is like includes Ukraine and Poland and Belarus and the Baltic states, right? You know what this is? These are the so-called bloodlands. I told you about that like probably 9 years ago. But just briefly to remind you, these are the so-called bloodlands. Why bloodlands? Because during World War II, in these territories, most of the blood was shed during World War II. I mean, including all the other battlegrounds. I mean, everything else, right? So this is what it means for us to be a buffer zone, either for the Germans or for the Russians. And this is how they have treated us for quite a long time. Very often you say, oh, you know, Russia has lost most people during World War II. This is actually not true, because if you include Ukraine and Belarus into this, then yes, of course. But not Russia per se, because, yeah, I know people in Leningrad, you know that it's been under the siege for, like, I don't know, 3 years of the war. I know people suffered there, but I'm talking now about proportions, and then I'm talking about other people, either from the east or from the west, talking about us as a buffer zone. Would you like to be a buffer zone? I mean, for you Americans, it's actually like, you have never experienced, right, being a buffer zone. So this is what it means for us to be a buffer zone. Can we go back to the very beginning, please? And it's not, I'm not saying this in the abstract, because we have people who live there, right? And actually they experience right now what it means to be treated as a buffer zone. And none of them has been killed yet, but some of them have had, I will talk about that tomorrow. What it means for them, for like people that you know, actually, that you met. You know the names, you maybe even ate with them, dined with them. What it means to be treated as a buffer zone. Next one, please. Next one, please. So that's the, you know, the original Moscow. So when we talked about what? How is it called? Borders. When we talk about borders, then you often find on the internet like this, you know, borders. Oh, this used to be our borders once. Well, so what? You know, you can always go, you know, either backwards or forwards on the timeline and point to, well, different kind of borders, right? So in the beginning, that's the beginning, actually, of the modern-day Russia. Well, not entirely, but like this. Like, it's smaller even than Estonia. And smaller even than Moldova. Come on. And then they started growing. I won't tell you how this happened, but, you know, when they say, when Putin says, oh, I am the new Peter the Great, and I need to restore, you know, great Russia, well, we say, make Russia small again, rather than great again. The next one, please. I know I sound very Russophobic, but I mean, with the history like ours, it's really hard to be Russophobic. So my grandfather, he lived in the part of Poland that's now the part of Ukraine, and then in 1939 he was liberated by the Soviets, and, you know. Basically, the Soviet Union was just another version of Russia, right? Believe me or not, but that's a medical fact, right? And so he was liberated by the Soviet Russians in 1939, and, you know, liberated in the Eastern style, so they liberated him of basically everything, right? And then 2 years later, the wicked German Nazis came, and they gave him back his land, his cows, his pigs, I mean, whatever was still alive after the 2 years of the rule of Moscow in this area. And then, unfortunately, 3 years later, the Russian Soviets, Moscovites, came again and liberated him for the second time. And he said, well, it's actually better to be, like, captured or seized, conquered by the wicked Nazi Germans than to be liberated by the Soviet/Russians. And that's basically the common experience of the people who live between Germany and Russia in Europe. You must have heard about the Great Famine, right? The Holodomor in Ukraine, when it was basically, well, man-made mass starvation of Ukrainian and also of Kazakh peasants or farmers. Some people say between, 5 to 12 million people starved during just a few years. This is how it, what it means to be treated like a buffer zone. Next one. Oh, but what is this? What is this? This is the Kievan Rus, as it used to be called. Let's call it a kingdom or a state that does not exist anymore. And this is where all the problems for the Ukrainians actually begin, because as you can see, it stretches all the way from the Black Sea in the south to the White Sea in the north. And it basically covers most of the present-day Ukraine and Belarus and big parts of the European Russia. And so everybody, this is why Putin says, oh, we Russians, we Ukrainians, we Belarusians are basically one and the same people, because it all started with the Kievan Rus. The problem was that later Mongols came, and then later the Polacks. I am really proud to be a Polak, because the Schwarz character, the how does it translate? You know the term Schwarz character? No? Schwarz character. No? Like the black character, like the... Yeah. What?
The bad guy,
exactly. Schwarz character. So we are always the Schwarz character in most of the Russian novels. Even Dostoevsky, read him again. I mean, the most mean, although not the dumbest, the most mean, the most Russophobic, the most also Roman Catholic guys are the Polacks. So... but then, can I ask for the next one, please? Hello? This is the beginning. Kiev is, it's spelled now differently, but doesn't matter. So it's like a huge ancient city on the Dnieper River. And yes, it was the capital of the Kievan Rus. Why do we even use the word Rus? Anybody knows? The next one. Because of this, I know that you have heard about Vikings. You know who they were. So the Vikings basically, is this blue or is this, what color is this? Purple. Okay. So the purple color, these are actually rivers or routes that the Vikings took from, obviously from Uppsala, through some of the rivers and went all the way down, that's the Dnieper River, to, this is not Kherson, to Constantinople. They looted, but they also traded. Some of them became the bodyguards of the Constantinopolitan emperors. But they also founded, well, not founded, they conquered cities, they expanded them, they basically created the beginning of the Kievan Rus. The Russian, Ukrainian, Belarusian names like Oleg, Ihor, Olga, they are all of this Norse origin, right? How about the word Rus, from which the word Russia comes? Yeah, I know, but that's, we will not go into this. It actually comes from a Norse word to row, or the man who row, right? Why? Well, because this is how the Vikings traveled, right, up and down the rivers of Eastern Europe. And this is where the original, Slavic word, Rus, came from, and this is why we have Belarus, for example, or Russia, who also use a Latin version of the word Ruthenia to call parts of the present-day Ukraine. This is where it all came. So basically, these were the Scandinavians, the Norse Vikings, who came down, and they also gave the beginning to the first dynasties that ruled in Kiev, but also up there, you see there is a town, Novgorod. Actually, that one is older even than Kiev. And one might think, Novgorod, this is the present-day Russia. Well, yeah and no, because this used to be for a long time like an independent state, completely disconnected from Moscow. It was actually under Ivan the Terrible, whom you all know, that the Moscow principality or the Muscovy started to expand and just swallow in all the other Eastern Slavic states and nations. The next one, please. We have 12 minutes left. Unfortunately, and this is the Kievan Rus, right, back then. We're talking like around the year 1000, more or less. Unfortunately, one of the Kievan kings had this brilliant idea to, instead of having like a one centralized state, to create a federal state. And he divided all the parts of the Kievan Rus among his sons. One of our kings did the same, and that was a huge mistake. I know you prefer like a federal, but in some parts of the world it works, especially if you have Canada up north and Mexico down there, but not here. The next one, please. Because then the Mongols came, right? We're talking about, around 1200. The Mongols came and they basically destroyed all of this. They destroyed many of the ancient cities. This is when Kiev was destroyed. This is when Novgorod got destroyed. And they either conquered these territories and they were like, they came, they looted, they burned. Then they went as far as Legnica, where some of you have been, actually, right? And at Legnica, one of Polish princesses or dukes defeated them, and then they turned back. This was the first time we saved the Western civilization. But unfortunately, they didn't retreat all the way to Mongolia, where they belong. But they stayed in what's basically like the southern parts of Ukraine and the eastern part of the European part of the present-day Russia. And then all this other, what is nowadays Russian part of the European Russia, all these former independent states, they became, what's the word, tributaries to the Mongols. So they paid taxes. But then the Mongols said, okay, you guys, you do whatever you want, just collect the taxes and bring them over to us. And this is why some people actually say, some historians argue that this arrangement that lasted for more or less 300 years, it shaped the political culture of the future Muscovy, and so also of Russia, present-day Russia. We can talk about it later, but it is what it is. Okay, the next one, please. But then as the Mongols retreated, something else took over all these lands. It was actually Lithuania. I mean, little tiny Lithuania, right? On the one of the Baltic states. They expanded. It was a very interesting kind of a state. Very mixed ethnically speaking. Linguistically speaking, but also religiously speaking, because there were like Muslims. No, back then there were no Muslims yet, but like, you know, ancient pagan, animistic, whatever, and then some Christians, because in the in between, the Kievan Rus became Christian in 988. But they expanded, they took basically over lands that were emptied after the Mongol invasion. This is why this part of Ukraine used to be called like wild fields, because there were plants, there were animals, and basically that's it, no people. It was completely deserted. Next one, please. Oh, and then a few years later, and we're talking about like the second half of the 14th century, a Lithuanian king became also a Polish king. And this was the beginning of what later became a Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, or Republic, as actually it used to be called. The next one. And then later, when the two countries or states united under one king, one constitution, one parliament, that was the year 1569, the bigger part of the present-day Ukraine became part of the, of Poland, right? This is Lithuania. I know Lithuania, Belarus, but it's like old map on top of the new map. So Belarus, this is why we have Belarus and Ukraine as two different nations, two different states, because for the next 300 more or less centuries, these were the political, well, not political borders. This was like a federal state, right, of Poland and Lithuania. So this is why we have this border, this Ukrainian-Belarusian border now here, right, because of that arrangement. I mean, back then, they spoke like different dialects of like the old Slavonic or Slavic language, and it's like in Germany now, right? You go from the northern part of Germany, or actually I will give you a better example. We have a church member that that comes from here. So you come to one village and people speak a language that they speak there. You go to another village and they speak basically the same language, but you know, you go to the 10th village and then you start to notice, oh, it's actually slightly different language, or maybe just the pronunciation. But then if you ask them what language you speak, they say, well, I speak my language. But then depending whether you're a Roman Catholic or Eastern Orthodox, then when they are asked about, so, are you a Polak or a Belarusian? Well, if I'm a Roman Catholic, I'm a Polak. If I'm an Eastern Orthodox, I'm Belarusian. But the language, I mean, it's really hard to say where the linguistic border between these two people actually is. You remember the map with the bloodlands? That's basically the same territory, right? The Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. This is where most of the wars in Europe actually took place. Why? Well, because Ivan the Terrible had this idea, and it was later also took over by Peter the Great, Catherine the Second, and all the other Russian tsars, and then also by the Soviet leaders, and now, well, probably with the exception of Yeltsin, who, well, he was who he was, but at least he said, okay, I don't mind all these other nations, you know, just to split away, go away, leave the Soviet Union or the Russian Federation, just live their own lives. But they say, no, this belongs to us, because we would first would like to have at least a common border with Germany so that we can trade with them. Or as Dmitry Medvedev, a former prime minister of Russia, and the president of Russia said, well, basically, we want to create like a one big happy family of nations stretching through all the way from Alaska to Portugal. And, you know, this might sound like a good idea, but whoever lives in this territory and hears anything like that, we start buying guns. then. Next one, please. What is this? And oh yeah. Unfortunately, you know, not all Ukrainians were happy under the Polish king. I don't know why. And then, right after the 30 years war that took part, like, in the west of Europe, there was this guy, Khmelnytsky was his name, and he started an uprising. And he said, no, we want to become kind of semi-independent from the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. Well, in the end, he lost a few battles. As much as Cossacks were like really fierce fighters, they didn't have as good education in like tactics and strategy as we did, and they didn't have the Polish hussars. You know what I'm talking about? The winged riders. Anyway. So he rebelled against the Polish-Lithuanian rule, and in the end he asked Moscow to come and help. And I would say that was the single most grievous mistake that Ukrainians ever made, to send for help to Moscow. And they did, and they come, and they stayed there. This is why the eastern part of Ukraine has been under the rule of Moscow for the most time. This is why, forget the map. This is why, for example, guys like Ihor Leszczyński in Ivano-Frankivsk, he's Ukrainian, is slightly different than the Ukrainian that his friends from eastern, from the Donbas region speak, right? Why? Tell me why. I mean, it's simple. Exactly, because, you know, Ihor, well, not him exactly, but he, his father's forefathers, they lived under the rule of Moscow, where they had to use the Russian language only for 50 years. 50. 50. I mean, in all the history of the universe. But the poor guys from the East, they lived under Moscow, and so under the influence of the Russian culture for 400 years, right? Almost 350, more or less. And if you live for over three centuries under a rule of another country that actually expects you to speak a different language, well, this is what happens, right? Especially if these are like similar languages from the grammatical point of view. This is why Ukrainians who live in the eastern part of Ukraine, they use more Russian words than the Ukrainians who live in the western part of Ukraine. And this is also why people like Putin can make the claim that, oh, you know, they are Russians because they basically speak the Russian language. Well, not necessarily, because, you know, first, there is the historical context, and second, there is what? And second, from the linguistic point of view, Russian and Ukrainian are not the same languages. Like, in Russian there are 6 cases, in Ukrainian there are 7 cases. In Ukrainian they have the past perfect tense. You know what that is. Good. In Russian they don't, right? Yes, when it comes to the vocabulary, they overlap, but much more in the east of Ukraine than in the west of Ukraine. Like, a dog in the east would be sabaka, in the west it's pes. Does it sound the same? Not at all, right? In Polish, a dog is pies, which is basically the same, right? This is how it goes. Over 6 centuries, you start to expand, well, influence the people, make them speak your language, make them, you know, adopt the culture, and then after 600 years, you say, oh, they eat like us, they drink like us, they speak like us, they are us. There is no Ukrainian nation. There is no Ukrainian language. There has never been a Ukrainian nation, right? Well, not necessarily. And this is why you need to know history. Oh, my time is up. That's it. That's it. Who's in charge here? I think that's the man in yellow and blue. That's a coincidence, I guess, yellow and blue.